Welcome to the tax update for July 2015. And in this month's edition, we look at six items, some of which demonstrate how desperately unfair tax legislation and the outcome can be. But first, we look at the Reid case, which, with $158 million at stake, involved Reid employment entering an arrangement thought up by Robson Rhodes, which was intended to reduce the tax and NIC payable by the employer, in this case Reid Employment, and indeed the employee, by taking advantage of the tax relief which is available when a worker goes to work at a temporary workplace and incurs travel expenditure and subsistence. Unfortunately, the flaw in the arrangement was that when an agency worker is appointed to go as a temp to a workplace, they do so going to their short-term but permanent place of work, and therefore the expenditure incurred in travel to and from such a location, and indeed any subsistence expenditure associated with it, would not be liable for tax purposes. Despite this, Reid Employment had been able to obtain a dispensation, but then in 2004, HMRC reconsidered the position and decided that a dispensation was not apposite, and that in fact the sums being paid to temporary workers were just salary in another form, and they therefore wanted to recover the tax and NIC which ought to have been deducted. It took 11 years for this to get to the Court of Appeal, but Reid's appeal was from the outset doomed to fail because it was just additional salary, and the temporary workers could not benefit from the salary sacrifice arrangement which they had entered into in an attempt to reduce their tax and NIC on travel and subsistence payments. Some light summer reading might be this year's finance bill, which at 212 pages containing 50 clauses and 8 schedules and accompanied by 132 pages of explanatory notes, cannot be described as light reading suitable for the poolside, but it will be an interesting read and a must read for practitioners. I felt terribly sorry for Mr. Robert Ames, who tried to claim that the sale of shares which had qualified for others for Enterprise Investment Scheme relief was exempt from tax, but who had failed to meet the condition of claiming income tax relief simply because he didn't have any taxable income in the year in which he made the investment. He invested £50,000 using the proceeds of sale from his marital home following his divorce. And because he didn't have any taxable income, he did not make a claim for enterprise investment income tax relief. But the legislation at Section 150A of the Capital Gains Tax Act is quite clear that it is a condition of getting the capital gains tax exemption that income tax relief must be claimed. Now, that might be wrong in principle, and it frustrates the aim of the legislation, which was to encourage investors with an exemption from capital gains. But technically, HMRC must apply the law as it is written, and it is written quite clearly that an income tax relief claim has to be made. It's an interesting decision because the first-tier tribunal judge, Anne Redstone, tried to be very fair to Mr. Ames, who was representing himself, and she considered other arguments not raised by Mr. Ames, such as the application of the human rights and the doctrine of proportionality, as well as considering whether or not she had any right to interfere with the revenue's discretion and care management provisions. But she concluded in the latter that she had not, and in the former it did not apply. So Mr. Ames had to pay the capital gains tax on his investment, which was over £272,000 of gain, resulting in a £72,811 of tax on the sum yielded. HMRC have published a consultation document on deeds of variation, and this concludes by the 7th of October, and I think it's a must read for any practitioners involved in this area. They've also published a review of the IR35 legislation, which is long overdue because this legislation should never have been introduced. And once it was introduced, it was absolutely clear it did not work as intended and it should have been repealed. But we've had it since 2000, and we can expect that the HMRC will now make changes. And the document at 11 pages is a must-read for advisors, particularly if you've got clients who operate through personal service companies. Finally, HMRC have announced a proposed reform of the replacement furnishings allowance, which used to be 10% of rent received. But they're now proposing to give an allowance limited to the costs incurred of replacing furniture, but not anything towards the initial cost of acquiring such furniture. Again, at 11 pages, it's worth a read. Thanks very much for listening.